Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.
Today on Not Sam Wrestling, X-Pac is here to talk about his second induction into the WWE Hall of Fame. We've got TLC to recap, a huge weekend of wrestling across the board, and a whole lot more. This is Not Sam Wrestling.
This is Not Sam Wrestling.
Introducing your host from New York, here is Sam Roberts.
Oh boy. Welcome, folks. Happy Monday. Let's start this week, huh? Welcome to Not Sam Wrestling, the franchise show. Yeah, buddy. Here we are, hours removed from TLC. We'll get into everything that happened in TLC over in the state of wrestling. It was a huge weekend for wrestling. It started on Friday with SmackDown running head-to-head with Ring of Honor Final Battle. You had NWA Into the Fire. You had CZW Cage of Death. You had TLC all this weekend. That's 5 wrestling shows. 5 big wrestling shows this weekend. All over the place. We'll get into all of them. I have thoughts. I think I have thoughts on literally every single show that I just mentioned, and I'll share those thoughts with you and a whole lot more. But today, our guest is X-Pac. X-Pac is on Not Sam Wrestling. Now, for the last week, X-Pac has been a big topic of conversation. I posted over on the new YouTube page, youtube.com/NotSamWrestling. I talked about X-Pac going into the Hall of Fame as the 4th member of the NWO, as well as Batista. That was what was announced a week ago, that X-Pac, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and Hulk Hogan, the 4 members of the NWO, are going in, as well as Batista going into the Hall of Fame this year in April. And it drew more controversy than I thought it would. Not my comments on it, but in general. The reason I made comments on it and the reason why I posted a video about it over at youtube.com/NotSamWrestling, which I hope that you guys are subscribed to, is that people thought that they thought that there shouldn't be a third member, a 4th member of the NWO going into the Hall of Fame, which if that's your stance, that's fine. Or they thought that X-Pac was not the 4th member of the NWO. And while numerically you are right, and I call him X-Pac because, I don't know, I guess that's just how I know him best. Sean Waltman, 1-2-3 kid, 6-Pac. However, you know, I'm not going to call a grown man kid, first of all. So I call him X-Pac, but Sean Waltman, you know what we're talking about. Numerically, he was not the 4th member of the NWO. But, you know, I think that the Big Show, who was the 4th member of the NWO, he was very important to that faction. However, I think that X-Pac, Sean Waltman, is more of a core member of that faction because of his connections with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash in the WWE. And I think that that was reflected in T-shirt sales. I think that that was reflected in his matches. I think that that was just reflected in the fan reception that he had. You know, I think that he was a big part. We talk about that. We talk about, you know, what he's up to in his life right now. He's got a podcast, of course, X-Pac 12360, and a lot more. But really, I mean, the topical reason to get him on the podcast is to talk about the fact that he's going into the Hall of Fame for a second year in a row, which is wild in and of itself. But in reality, I just wanted to get him on the podcast to talk about the NWO days. I was like, you know, it's kind of lame when you're just talking to Sean Waltman and you're like, hey, let's tell a whole bunch of stories from this one, from, you know, 1997. Because who wants to tell stories from 1997? It's 2020 almost. But if you're going into the Hall of Fame, technically you can get away with just telling stories from 1997 in the context of its current day. So that was my real goal, was just to get Sean Waltman on the show and talk to him about the NWO. Because as the years go on, my affection for everything the NWO was, especially in that first year and a half maybe, just knows no bounds. Like, as a lifelong WWE diehard, I was never a WCW fan, never became a WCW fan. But there was a period of time, I was an ECW fan, I was a WWE diehard. I was kind of an ECW diehard. I've ordered every pay-per-view, I went to the shows. I mean, I was a pretty big ECW fan, but WWE was my thing. And I looked at WCW as scum. I looked at WCW, however WWE wanted me to look at WCW, that's how I did. When I watched WCW, I thought it was Billionaire Ted, the Huckster, and the Macho Man. Macho Man Randy Savage was my favorite wrestler up until November of 1994. Was it 94 or 95? I want to say it was 94. Whatever the day was that he left WWE, he was my favorite wrestler until the night that I watched him at 6:05 p.m. walk onto WCW Saturday night. And I still watched it because, you know, wrestling's wrestling. Wrestling's awesome. But he broke my heart that day. You know who became my favorite wrestler after Macho Man showed up on WCW Saturday night? Big Daddy Cool Diesel. But you know who else was one of my favorite wrestlers? The 1-2-3 Kid. I was obsessed with 1-2-3 Kid. I was obsessed with Six-Pac. I've never even told Sean Waltman this, but at one point in my life, I did make a tape to send to MTV to get on the show Fanatic, where regular people got to go and interview the celebrities they were fans of. And I saw Stone Cold on the show. A fan got to interview Stone Cold. So I said, well, if that fan gets to interview Stone Cold, I bet I'm the biggest Six-Pac fan in the world. I drew sixes on my denim jacket with Sharpie. I was a big six guy. But I was a big 1-2-3 Kid fan because I was a small kid. I was a small guy. And I said, there is hope for me. Now, unfortunately, Sean Waltman was a small, insanely athletic, talented individual. I was small, but also unathletic and no discernible talent. So wrestling wasn't in the cards for me regardless. But for a brief moment in time, the 1-2-3 Kid and Six-Pac made me feel like it was an option. But I talk about being a WWE diehard and not being a WCW fan to say that at one point in time, the NWO was the coolest thing in wrestling. That's why to this day, you can wear an NWO logo and you're the man. You know, if you see me, I'll post a video of this interview that I did with X-Pac today, and you'll see I'm literally wearing my chalk line white and black NWO, NWO Hollywood, but technically, you know, I consider this the original NWO, my white and black NWO jacket. Because it's still so cool. You put an NWO logo something on it, I'm buying it. Ask the hundreds, I'm buying it. But I got to talk to him, Sean Waltman, that is, X-Pac, about the NWO days. About what was going on back then, about what it's like to be going into the Hall of Fame, representing that time, and everything in between. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest this week on Not Sam Wrestling is the one and the only Sean Waltman. Let's hit it.
The Not Sam Wrestling interview.
One of my all-time favorite guests is back on the show, and somebody who I'm happy to say is about to become, we found out a week ago, a two-time WWE Hall of Famer. X-Pac is back. What's going on, man? What's the haps?
What's up, Sam? Hey, man. You trim your beard.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the WWE has those maestros people come in. And so they took, yeah, like, they start, because it was just getting, like, Bushman wild. And yeah, so, like, they trimmed it down on the sides and kind of let it grow longer. Like, at some point, I'm going to shave my head, and I want to stand next to Hunter and just look like they put Hunter in a dryer. And like, here's me, you know?
So when you're eating, was like hair getting in your mouth while you were eating?
Yeah. I mean, even to this day, like, you know, in the morning I'll have like a green juice or something. And my wife has to stop me before I go out because she's like, you got smoothie in your mustache. I mean, I remember, I think like a year ago, maybe less than a year ago, we talked. It might have been the last time you were on. And when we turned on the Skype, you said you were jealous of my beard. But I look at you now, and the growth has been tremendous in, I feel like, a very short time.
Yeah. And a part of it, I can credit to you. You inspired me.
You know? Who would have thought, you know? You talk about childhood dreams coming true. Like, that's incredible. That's, well, as long as I can inspire people. Well, speaking of inspiring, man, I mean, I remember, like, not too long ago, a few years back, I think that you questioned ever getting into the Hall of Fame or anything like that. I mean, there was a period of time where I feel like, and I don't know if you felt the same way, that like when WWE would put the spotlight on the NWO or DX or whoever it was, like X-Pac would not be at the forefront in reflecting on the story. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And it seems like everything has changed full circle in a positive way to better reflect what was actually happening in that era, the era of DX, and now, you know, the era of NWO.
Yeah, and it's not because, you know, it had to do with, you know, like all the things I did outside the ring.
Yeah.
After I left, obviously. Yeah. I mean, we're not, it's like not, let's cut the cagles here. It's because of that, you know? And rightfully so. I mean, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a history book. At the end of the day, it's, yeah.
Doesn't mean it didn't hurt, Sam.
Yeah.
To see yourself erased and the things you did, you know, erased. But, you know, I wasn't out there representing the industry very well.
Right. Yeah. And that's a big deal, especially when people love finding the kind of disastrous results of people in the industry for whatever reason. Like, people who don't like wrestling do not like talking about wrestling except when it's a horrible story of somebody gone wrong. And they do. They blame the industry at that point, as opposed to kind of digging into the actual human beings that this is happening to.
Right. And see, I think I've talked about it with you even, you know, about, you know, the people blaming the industry and it's not like the industry or the culture, you know, that at least in the past, you know, didn't bear some blame, but we bring, like, most of us, have had huge problems once we've gotten in the industry. We brought bags with us. We brought the baggage with us, you know? And I just think that part of it has been overlooked so much.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Or just totally not even acknowledged.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, so everyone was, you know, totally like, you know, like everyone came in with a clean slate and all the trauma and all the fucked up shit happened once they got into business? Usually not.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like it's unique to wrestling either. It's like the same thing that drives people to want to be well-known, want to be famous, want to be in front of an audience, want, like, adulation and applause is the same thing that can lead a lot of people to take advantage of bad behavior when it's in front of their face. You know, it's that's the personality type, right? But yeah.
Oh, yeah, because there's something to be said about attention.
Yeah.
Oh, like once you're used to the attention.
Yeah.
And then you don't have it anymore, you'll take it any way you can get it.
Right.
You know, for bad reasons or good reasons.
Right. That makes sense. Well, I mean,
absolutely true, 1,000%.
Yeah. The fact that you've come out of that to this extent, to the point where now, so let's talk about it, because we talked a whole bunch in the last year. I think we talked before the Hall of Fame and after the Hall of Fame about going in as part of DX and what a, like, moment it was. You talked about, you know, how difficult it was and the stage fright and everything. But when you find out that you're going in again this year, like, it feels like you're just coming off of this high of going in with your best friends, only to find out months later that you get to go in again this year with your other best friends, Hall and Nash. What was, first of all, when did you find out? Because for all of us to be finding out now is way earlier than usual.
And we found out like three weeks earlier. Yeah, so we had to sit on that info for 3 weeks.
Do you know why they decided this year to go ahead and announce you guys and Batista early? Was it just like, hey, we're putting tickets on sale and we want... Yeah, that's what I figured.
Tickets, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, they're like, you know, we got this Hall of Fame thing. I'd like to know what I'm buying tickets to. How did you feel when you found out? They're like, we're putting the NWO in and you're going in. Did they tell you... These are the four. You're one. We're putting four people in, and you're one of them. Or did they just say you're going in, and we'll tell you who the rest of them are?
No, I mean it was. Carano called me, and then you know, I you heard me on my show, right? You listened to my show,
of course.
The other day, right?
Yeah.
You used to be. You get a call from Talent Relations. You know, it's from Talent Relations. It's like, oh fuck, what did I do? So it's usually not great news, right? It's like they want you to do something you don't want to do, or you did something that they don't want you to do, or, you know, fine, whatever. And, but I answered, and, you know, because, I mean, those days are long past, so, but it's still that trauma comes up whenever you see the phone. It's like, ah.
Yeah, when that 203 area code pops up, you're like, ah.
No, but so I answered, and you know, Carano just told me, oh, you're going in the Hall of Fame again. And I, honestly, I started laughing. Because how ridiculous. Like, okay, 2 years in a row?
Yeah.
Two times, but 2 years in a row?
Yeah, I mean, is that like, because I was listening to you two on your show, and you were in on X-Pac 12360, which is on YouTube, and it's on if you can get the audio of it on iTunes and everything else. All you have to do is type in X-Pac 12360. You can find it on the video on YouTube, the audio everywhere you get podcasts. And you were saying that like you kind of had this moment on your show where you had to take a pause because you couldn't believe your life, like how crazy it is that this is happening to you. Is there a part of you, because I know like for me when good things happen, 3/4 of me is like happy about it. And like, you know I worked my ass off for this and blah, blah, blah. But then there's at least 25%, if not more, sometimes it's a lot more than 25%, that's sitting there going, I don't deserve this. Like they're going to find, I shouldn't be here. This is ridiculous.
But I mean, it's kind of that, but it's just like, it's more how me out of billions of people necessarily, then I don't deserve this.
Right.
You know, because there's a lot of people that do that don't get.
Yeah.
Know?
And you're not just talking about the Hall of Fame. You're talking about the whole life. Yeah.
Yeah. Life. Man. Yeah. Like forget the Hall of Fame. Just like any of these blessings. It's just insane to me. You know, like.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It is nuts. And I mean, yeah, I feel like that's what the second Hall of Fame induction will do to you. Like the second Hall of Fame induction is that moment where you're like, whoa, like now you can really reflect on kind of everything and go, this is a crazy life.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like the ups and downs and the, like, you know, for a while there, you know, people were 100% sure they knew how my story was going to end.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I kind of thought that might be the case too.
Yeah, so. I mean, I was about to say, I mean, at one point in your life, you were one of those people that knew how your life was going to, how your story was going to end.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, now I'm blown away by all of it. And I'm just, I don't know, man. Now that, like, you and I are talking about this, it's just like, and because I've already I said on my show, it's just like billions of people.
Yeah.
You know, and just why us? Not just me, Sam, you, man. Look at you.
You have
your dream job.
Yeah, you think about it, and it really is like you start thinking about it, and you're going, there is no difference between me and that other person who wanted this. Like, you're like, yeah, I worked, but so did people work all the time. Like, a lot of people work for this. Like, what is the thing that made you have this dream life that made this other person, it just didn't happen? Is it because they quit too early? Is it because right place, right time? Is it just every single star has to align? I mean, part of it, look, you have to understand that for you, part of it is because you're a good person. Like, you don't survive, when you're talking about your story specifically, you don't survive everything that you went through without people throughout your life that have been like, no, 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 he's worth helping. Like, there are plenty of people that are assholes that they just don't get the help because nobody wants to help them. They don't deserve it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm going to take your word for it. I don't go around saying, hey, I'm a great person. I feel I am now. Like, the way I view myself is a lot different now, you know? I mean, I know I'm still flawed, but I feel like I'm a good person and, you know? And yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you. It helps, right?
Yeah.
But the thing I was thinking about this, Sam, is like, you know, we both have worked really hard.
Yeah.
Where we are, all of that, you know, the proper attitude, not that my attitude's been the best at times, but you know, when it counted, there's a lot of people that have worked way harder than us, Sam.
Yeah.
Way more than we are. And
yeah.
It didn't happen for them.
Yeah. You're 100% right. Yeah, I mean, it's not like, it's not one of those things that you could just sit there and give yourself a pat on the back for because, well, I did it and I deserve it. And if they deserved it, they would be here too. That's not always the case, is it?
No.
Yeah.
I just think it should make people, when they do get it, like, appreciate it that much more and be that much more grateful. That's all. I don't mean to sound corny here, man. It's just.
No, I mean,
This whole like life of mine.
Yeah, it's wild, man. It's wild. So yeah. It made me think about the NWO too, because I feel like over the years, because of how big DX got and was and is and evolved, right? And because of how successful, like, let's be honest, like, DX did come after the NWO, but at the end of the day, the founding members of DX are Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and the winners get to tell the story of history, right? So DX has this forever spot. It's also, DX is a WWE creation, and at the end of the day, the WWE was the winner of that whole situation. I think the Click also has this huge spot in the story of wrestling, especially in that era, but the Click also, I think, comes above the NWO when these stories have been told more recently and when history's told. And the Click, I feel like, gets connected to DX, but not as much the NWO. And in reality, the NWO needs to be in that conversation with everything. I mean, if any faction changed wrestling in the 90s, it was the NWO.
Yeah. Whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole. Everything.
But like you're talking about, Sam, a lot of people, they either don't know or they just don't know. I mean, maybe they know or whatever, and they just don't see it this way. But the whole NWO, all of it came from the Click. DX, NWO, it all came from the Click.
So that's what I was saying on my podcast this week. When I was talking about the whole, like, the controversy that's been online about you being the fourth member of the NWO going into the Hall of Fame, and some people either think it should be somebody.
I wish they wouldn't have put it that way, like the four original member, because like it took me a while to get there.
Right.
You know, originally it might have ended up I was the first person to show up, and then, you know, Scott, and then Kev. That's how it very well may have if I hadn't have missed my window of opportunity on my 90-day notice.
So that's, you know, the story, like, that, like, you had spoken. So what's the story, right? I mean, I know the kind of basics, and I know you covered it on your podcast too, but I feel like people don't really know. I mean, I feel like the sort of collective thinking is that Hall and Nash left, went to WCW, and then you followed suit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, and that's how it happened. But what happened, you know, is I was out here in L.A., and I met with Barry Bloom, super agent Barry Bloom, to talk about some movie roles, potential movie roles. And, you know, he brought up to me, you know, everything going on with WCW and Bischoff, you know, getting the power of the purse. And we never thought about leaving. We complained a lot about conditions and business being down and, you know, creative and all that, but never did we think about the actual leaving, you know. And Eric said that, and I got on the phone with Scott, and that started the whole thing. Just to make a long story short.
Right. You were like, well, you know, this thing's going on over here. And the story that you told on your podcast was that you have 90 days to let, at the time, you had 90 days to let the company know you weren't going to be renewing your contract. And if you didn't let them know in that time frame, then your contract automatically rolled over. And that's what happened.
Yeah. And they knew I wanted to leave. So I was fucked.
Yeah.
I was telling everyone, that's when, you know, Scott's leaving. He has the last pay-per-view match leaving. And usually they put the guy over on the way out.
Right.
And he beat me and put me in a diaper.
Right. That, yeah. His last match on pay-per-view was the diaper match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the diaper, and I'm the one staying.
We'll get back to X-Pac in just a moment, but people ask me all the time. They go, Sam Roberts, last professional broadcaster, what is the best way that we can support Not Sam Wrestling? We know it's been something that you've been doing for years, completely independently. Regardless of your work with other companies, Not Sam Wrestling is something you do for us. No network, no bigger company, no nothing. You know who owns the rights to all this? Yours truly, the last professional broadcaster. How can we support such a DIY project? And I'll tell you how you can support it. It's a couple of ways. Of course, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/NotSamWrestling. Just before TLC, we did a TLC pre-show exclusive to the folks at Patreon. We do stuff like that all the time. But if you want to help support the podcast and you want to do it on the arm, you want to do it without it costing you any money, there's a couple of ways you can do that. Number one, of course, tell your friends and subscribe to this podcast wherever you do, whether it's on Spotify, whether it's on iTunes, whether it's on SoundCloud. Subscribe to it, download it every week, give it a listen every week. You can leave us a review and a rating on iTunes. You can send in a question or comment to notsamwrestling@gmail.com. And of course, the thing you can do to really help me out right now, as we expand the Not Sam Wrestling brand into its own brand new, official, and unique YouTube page, you can join us on YouTube. Subscribe to that new YouTube page, youtube.com/NotSamWrestling. There is new content going onto that YouTube page all the time. It is the exclusive home to every interview that you hear on Not Sam Wrestling. It is the exclusive home to hot take snippets that come out of this podcast, The State of Wrestling and Thursday, Not Sam Thursday every week. And it is the exclusive YouTube home to the complete audio of each and every Not Sam Wrestling podcast that we post. So go on youtube.com/NotSamWrestling. Click the subscribe button right now and join us, huh? Watch the videos. Have a good time. Let's get back to Sean Waltman, a.k.a. X-Pac. So at that point, at the point of the diaper match, did you know, obviously you know you're trying to leave because you know what's going on over in WCW. Did you know
By the time of the diaper match?
Yeah.
I knew I was stuck. I knew I wasn't fucking going anywhere.
So you're sitting there, and you're standing in the ring. Because I remember the visual. I remember like it was yesterday. I'm a little kid watching, because I was a 1-2-3 Kid fan. And I'm sitting there, and you're doing your best. You're crying. You got the diaper on. You're baby powdered. The whole thing has happened. In your head, are you going, oh, my God, I'm sitting here in a diaper with baby powder on. The company knows I want to leave, and all my friends are leaving.
Yes. Well, not all of them. Scott, you know,
I guess Sean and Hunter were still there. But really, yeah, I mean, you don't know. Once, if you've got a 5-person group and 2 of them are leaving, who knows what's going to happen there, right?
At the time, I was just so like, oh, they're not using me good, and I wasn't getting paid. You know, mm-hmm. I was in the click, but you're not, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I'm getting it anymore. It's just
right
in the click.
Right. Yeah. You just get to you get to throw up the hand gesture. That's it.
So, you know, that was that, and just and at the time, man, I just assumed it was all their fault. Like, they were just screwing me. You know, it had mm-hmm. nothing to do with me being fucked up all the time or
yeah,
you know, anything like that. So
right. Yeah. Or the fact that
I
if
just
you had
figured if I went there, everything would be perfect.
Right. That's all. Yeah. That was the only issue. It was just, don't worry. Everything that's going wrong now, it's somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but every, you know, I mean, I got healthy and then I went. And
yeah.
The thing is I made way more money when I got to WCW. So that was a life changer for me. Changed my life.
Right. Because then when you go back to WWE, it's not like you're going back for 1-2-3 kid money. You're going back for the money that you're making now.
Correct.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, obviously you came in, as Six, the sixth member of the NWO, your name is Six, you know, that's pretty clear. But to me, I was saying that I feel like anybody that was around watching that era, first of all, I think that one of the reasons why the NWO is not remembered, and they're remembered pretty strongly, but I still think that the NWO is a little bit undervalued in history. And I think that part of that is because what a mess it became. Like, you got out at the end of the day yeah. while the getting was good. Like, you were only there for a year. You know, I think that the fact that DX always, at least to some level, stayed cool, and the NWO got so watered down and lame that people can't just separate that last part and just focus on, I mean, that first year of the NWO was like nothing else in wrestling. I remember sitting there as like a diehard WWE fan. Now, I mean, I watched Nitro to see what was on, maybe, but it was like WWE was my thing. And I still wasn't a WCW fan, but I was an NWO fan. Like, I was just a fan of the NWO. And there's never been a faction like that that got so big, for better or worse, that it was, I mean, the NWO was bigger than WCW in that year. In that year, maybe first year and a half before it got sort of muddled and messy. But, you know, I was talking on my podcast that I think a couple things cement for me, like, there's no doubt in my mind that you are, when you're talking about the core members, not the order in which they joined, but the core members of the NWO, I feel like if they wanted to put Hall, Nash, and Hogan in the Hall of Fame, just the three of them, I'm going, okay, you know, I get that. The Bash of the Beach trio, like, you know, makes sense. But if they're going to add a fourth member, I think that for several reasons, but like, no matter what anybody says, the NWO was a representation of WWE invading WCW. I know that they try to say that it wasn't, but it definitely was. And you being there, I guess technically Ted DiBiase was coming from WWE and he was the fifth member, but he wasn't wrestling anymore. He was a manager, even though you guys didn't really need a manager. Like, you were the next wrestler who came over from WWE, got in the ring. The fact that the NWO was a branch off of the Click, you're a Click member. Everybody knows Hall, Nash, Kid. Yep. Like, that's a thing. And
we were the Wolfpack.
Right.
In the NWO, we were the Wolfpack.
Right.
Inside the NWO.
Right. And I also think that people don't remember. And then you brought this up, but I feel like the people on your show, maybe, I mean, I'm probably older than them, so they probably don't really remember. But that six-ball t-shirt was like the shirt. I had three NWO shirts. I had the original NWO shirt. I had the Outsider shirt, the first one with the picture of Scott and Kevin on it. And then I bought another NWO logo shirt. And the only difference was the six-ball was on the back, but I had to have that one too.
Yeah.
Huh?
It was the biggest selling shirt they had once it came out.
I'm sure. I mean, I remember it was just
close. And I got to be honest, like, so I don't know if you remember after I got hurt and I'm out, like, you know, every week they did the big, every, all the NWO guys in the ring.
Yeah.
And Hogan's talk and then Scott's doing a survey, yada, yada. And like every week, Scott made everyone wear a six ball shirt.
And that's awesome.
Hogan or Mach or Dream, you know, Dusty. somebody shouting out to me every week, keeping me alive, keeping my name alive.
So cool. And that's just them doing it. That's just Scott going like, no, we're going to do this. I remember Scott used to wear the shirt backwards on TV.
Oh, yeah.
He'd have the six ball in the front just so everybody knew.
Tyson style it and then, flip it around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome, man. I mean, do you even realize at the time how big that is that Scott and Kevin were doing that type of stuff for you? I mean, I'm sure you can look back now as an older person and go like, oh, my God, how far out of their way they went to make sure that I was taken care of.
Absolutely. Which made it when I ended up, like, because I was away for almost a year, you know, like 10, 11 months before I showed back up at, WWE.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have thought it because they were talking about me every week and, shouting me out every week. So I was still fresh on WCW TV in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my mind's eye, I wouldn't have thought that you were off WCW for 10 months before you showed up on Raw. I would have said like 2 months, maybe. Yeah. And I'm sure that's because you were present. Because, the NWO was cutting full group, full segment length promos on every single episode of Nitro, sometimes two or three times an episode.
And also the live events, all the house shows.
Yeah.
You're not getting Hogan. You're not getting Mach. You're not getting DiBiase. You're getting Scott. You're getting Kev, and you're getting me.
Yeah. So
you would get, like maybe Buff or Norton once they added those guys or whatever, but mostly those guys stayed in Japan.
Right.
They were holding it down in Japan. They were a big deal over there.
The NWO Japan.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
they need to be recognized for that too.
I think they should. I think they should. Yeah. And I remember, even like, it was funny cause when Muta and like Chono would come over and be on Nitro and they'd be representing NWO Japan, I'd be like, yeah, those guys are awesome too. Just because it was like, yeah, like I'm down with NWO throughout the world.
And I go have a match in Osaka Dome.
Yeah.
And I team with NWO Sting.
Uh-huh.
And he's more over than I am. Because he's like getting over, like as part of NWO Japan.
That's awesome. So NWO Sting, all the times that he wasn't on WCW TV was just because they didn't even have Sting in Japan. So how could NWO Sting be that big of a deal?
Because he was part of the NWO.
That's it, I guess. That's it. He didn't suck. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about too. This is the other thing that I brought up on my podcast was not only the foundation from WWE, the foundation from the Click, the T-shirt, but also when you think about like the actual wrestling part of the NWO, like there aren't that many spectacular matches from the NWO era. Like I think generally, and we've talked about them.
There wasn't a lot of, five-star match having NWO members. They were just big stars.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But there were a cut, like the Outsiders and the tag matches were always cool. But then WCW didn't have any tag teams. So it'd be like the Outsiders were the biggest stars in the world. And then they'd have like, the Meng and the Barbarian or whatever. And it's like, all due respect to Meng and the Barbarian, but they are doing what it is that they do. They're not doing five-star matches either, but you brought in, go ahead.
I had a really cool feud with Ric Flair.
Yes. I mean,
it was so, so good.
That was, that was the same era when you guys did the Horseman skit and you got to play Ric Flair like crying and yeah.
He wanted to kill me way before that.
So you were legit getting under Flair's skin during that time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I told this story, but I'll tell it real quick. Like, it was over the Slamboree six-man with Kevin, with Green and Piper and Flair. And, they wanted maybe all of them, but at least Flair and Piper for sure, or Flair protested me being in the match. They wanted Hogan in it. It would have been a bigger deal, but like the match wouldn't have been as good.
Right.
You know, and when I found that out, it really pissed me off. And I, you know, it lit a fire under my ass, and it brought a lot out of me on the mic and,
yeah,
you know, and all that, you know, and the, some of the things I said, and it was pretty disrespectful. And
but that's part of
slapped,
it.
You know, I slapped him in the face on TV. That wasn't supposed to happen, you know. Don't slap that in the face. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No. But I mean, so, that was also like, that was part of the thing. That was also the problem with WCW, was that there was a whole section of the audience that at the time, they didn't want to see the guys that had been wrestling forever. They didn't want to see the legends. They didn't want to see like the established stars. They wanted to see these new, edgy, young guys. And like, you know, when you're in high school and you see somebody like you, who's, you know, got the long hair and the bandana and the sunglasses and looking cool and like slapping legends in the face and being disrespectful to Piper, it's like, you know, it's not nice, but it's cool.
Yeah.
You know? Especially at the time, you know, it was not like the mid to late 90s were not the youth of the mid to late 90s were not as kind as the youth is today.
Brutal, right?
Brutal. Brutal.
Think about it and I'm like, oh.
But it was what it was. Yeah, exactly. You were the poster boy. I mean, you also, though, I mean, when you talk about, like actual wrestling, you know, the sold-out Eddie Guerrero ladder match was by far the best match on that pay-per-view. The matches you had with, like, Dean Malenko in the cruiserweight division. Like, the, you know, the, there was this other side of it where all of a sudden there was an NWO guy having great matches. And the cruiserweight division was important because, you know, the cruiserweight division, whether, you know, WCW was going to do anything with it or not, it had a lot of eyes on it. I mean, to this day, the stars are still talked about. And so the fact that somebody like you was able to hang in the main event with Ric Flair, but also be kind of flexible enough where you could exist in the cruiserweight division and have really good matches in the middle of a pay-per-view as well, became a huge asset, I think, and like created a much more well-roundedness with what the NWO was.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll let you say that. I don't want to, you know, Sam, I don't know if you've heard me say this before, but it's always better when somebody else toots your horn.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm here to do. I'm here to toot your horn.
Toot their own. So I just have always felt funny about that, but I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah, good. That's probably the smartest tack to take. Was there anybody, who was your favorite opponent in that era? Like, who would you look at and see on the card and go like, okay, we're gonna have fun tonight, or we're gonna have a good match tonight, or whatever?
Wow. That's a good question. It was weird because it wasn't like, okay, we had a house. We didn't have a lot of long house show runs in CW. So it's not like we could get like a series of matches with the same people. But I had some good live event matches, some good house show matches with Dean Malenko, Flair, and, you know, like I worked with him in the Spectrum.
So, like, with Flair, even though you knew that he hated you in real life, like, you knew, like, he was pissed at you just for being there, you'd still go out there and, like, you'd still have great matches.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It didn't matter. And I didn't like him either at the time. But I loved the idea of being in there with the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. It was amazing.
Sure.
That's separate, man.
Yeah.
That's fucking Nature Boy. And he's the greatest of all time. And I'm in there with him, you know?
That's so weird about that. So I feel like that's unique to wrestling. What'd you say?
I'm calling the matches because he wouldn't be a baby bait. Like, if I let him call the match, he'd make himself the heel in the match.
Wow.
So, like, call it.
Wow. That's nuts. And it really is unique to wrestling, too, where, like, you're having trouble personally with somebody as, you know, that human being. But then when it comes to getting in the, like the icon that is Ric Flair really doesn't interfere with the person that is Ric Flair. You know what I mean?
tell you why he trusted me, because I always had really good ideas to make him look good. And when he heard them, it was hard to argue with them.
Right. Like he'd be
him up, man. The reaction is, that's Ric Flair, man. They love him so much out there. It's so easy to build a match around Ric.
Right.
He just got to do it.
But that's interesting, you know, though. Like, as much as they love him, at the time, Ric Flair would just go back to the kind of conventions of trying to get them to boo him.
Yes. Just out of habit.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he did it for so long.
God's truth with Nate.
Have you thought...
Like, anyone that has worked with him in that capacity, with him the baby face and they're the heel, they'll tell you the same thing.
Was there any time working with him that you were, like, maybe in the beginning, were you nervous about calling the match with Rick, or did you have enough confidence in yourself as a performer that even Ric Flair wasn't going to intimidate you?
I was confident. When I got there, I was really confident. When you were on the grind, like we were up there, I had no problems whatsoever throwing my ideas out there, like saying this is how it needs to be done at all.
That's good. And I'm sure that's the only way to succeed too. If you're sitting there like, you know, timid, it's not going to work out, is it?
Yeah. I was very confident and sure myself when I threw things out there idea wise. And, you know, most of the time it seemed like the better idea.
Have you thought at all?
I'm not just talking about with Nate. I'm just
of course. Yeah. You know. Have you thought at all about what it would actually look like to have every living member of the NWO on stage at the Hall of Fame? Because I'm sitting there like thinking about, like, if they just were like, screw it, let's let everybody get on stage. NWO, Wolfpack, LWO, NWO Silver, WWE NWO, just throw everybody on stage. Maybe not everybody gets a ring, but everybody gets to at least be on stage in that moment. Like, I think it would be great if you four are on stage, you do your little speeches. First of all, I hope that, you know, Scott, I almost feel bad for Scott because he probably has, I think he definitely has, the best Hall of Fame speech of all time.
Right.
And so the fact that he has to give another one now is like, well, what do you want? What are you talking? It was perfect. Why would you make me mess with that? But have you at all thought about, like, you all do your thing and then at the very end go, like, give it up for the NWO? And I mean, everybody comes out. Jeff Jarrett comes out and Scott Norton comes out and Nick Patrick comes out. Everybody comes out.
Huh. That's not a bad idea at all.
I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to happen, but, you know, I definitely at least thought it would be right to, you know, mention some of the names of the people that, you know, that really helped make, you know, I mean, a lot of those guys, everyone that put on a shirt contributed.
Yeah.
As convoluted as it all got and watered down, they still contributed, man.
And it's a part of history. I mean, it's you can't just pick and choose with history. It's a part of history. And it's like, all due respect, when is NWO Sting going to get to have a platform like that? Even Scott Norton, like, as much as he's incredible, he's not getting into the WWE Hall of Fame. Like, what? I'm sure every single person would love just to have that one moment where they can just stand there and feel the energy one more time.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great. Have you?
I was just thinking, like, and here I get two.
It goes back to where we started, right? Like, yeah. Have you thought at all about, because I remember we were talking after last year's Hall of Fame.
I was just thinking, because the main reason that, you know, I heard they were inducted in NWO and, so I just said I forgot a few names last year.
Yeah.
That people want to thank, and if they could just shoehorn me into this year's ceremony, I could thank the people I forgot to last year.
Yeah, I mean, what's the strategy here? Are we going to thank the people that you forgot? Are you going to rethank some people? Is it going to be a thing where you're primarily thanking people in the context of the NWO?
Yeah.
That's what you think. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the people I forgot, you know, like Kane and different, you know, a couple people.
Yeah.
But, you know, mainly like about some of the people that, you know, made that work, like Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah.
Great book. You know, he booked us strong as fuck, Sam.
I mean, yeah, he did. I don't think any group's ever been booked stronger than the NWO.
And it needed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why it worked at the end of the day.
Yeah. And also, like, like no one thinks about this,
mm-hmm.
but like all that energy and that attitude and all that we brought on camera with us and projected, we got that from hip hop. We got okay. that from West Side Connection. Go listen to West Side Connection album right now. When you get off of this, listening to this or watching this, you'll see where we got a lot of that stuff from.
I'm glad that you brought up the hip hop connection, because that was also a thing, like, especially as more people started joining, and like, I feel like Scott Hall would slip in hip hop references constantly. You would, Conan would, like, all nothing but hip hop references, which wasn't that wasn't happening in wrestling. But something that I literally just found out this week from listening to your podcast was I was positive that Six-Pac was from Tupac, and that, you know, Conan had thought of it. When I found out that it was a Hogan nickname, that Hogan had gave you the nickname based on Six-Pac, like a six-pack of beer, I was like, what? No way.
But once you hear the story, you can go, okay, yeah, I see that.
I mean, it makes total sense. Like, once you say it, I'm like, yeah, I guess so. But you just had, you all had the intelligence to spell it P-A-C. Like, and just turn it into that.
Rather quickly.
Hey, was the name Six, obviously the sixth member, but it was the fact that it was 1 + 2 + 3, was that ever actually a part of it? Or was that something that later, it's just convenient that 1 + 2 + 3 was six?
I think it had something to do with it, because I think Eric might have, like, thought about it with, you know, like numerology.
Hmm.
Yeah. No. But it seemed like that was it just as big a part as, you know, sixth member, because obviously I wasn't really the sixth member, was I?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I guess that it's all, yeah, it's all intentional, right? Like, six was just an important part of where you were at. Do you think, I would think that now, right? When you look at who's in the Hall of Fame, I think that it's pretty easy to make the case that the 1-2-3 kid is a Hall of Famer, right? Like, I mean, you know, they've let a lot of people in on various different levels, and I think that that's important too. To the you can't just let, you know, the guy in the main event in every year, and that's who's in the Hall of Fame. Like, it's like the 1-2-3 kid. Number one, I think, was a pretty impactful character in general, but number two, I feel like the 1-2-3 kid really introduced the idea of cruiserweights to WWE as a credible offense. Like, you having any offense whatsoever, you know, at all in the beginning of what you were doing was new to WWE. And I just feel like it had a big impact. And anybody that watched wrestling from 93 to 95 remembers 1-2-3 kid. Do you feel like that's in the cards? Is it something that you even think about at this point? Like, what would you do if you were like, I'm going in for a third time?
You know how they do that legacy inductions?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they just have a bunch of people and they throw, like, if they really want to do that, like, do it that way. Like, I don't want, like, I've had enough of me, okay?
Yeah, just throw you on the Tron. You know, do it in between two other speeches and move on. That's great. That's great. Yeah, I mean, because then I was thinking, I was like, well, yeah, obviously if there was going to be a solo induction, it would have to be 1-2-3 kid. But then I was like, well, technically there was X-Factor era X-Pac. But I feel like DX took care of X-Pac, right? Okay.
Yeah, we're good on that. And so you know that style you're talking about? Like, that's yeah. the main event. That's their main style they work there now.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the heavyweight style now.
And yeah, I mean, not only is it their heavyweight style, but I swear, when I saw you as the 1-2-3 kid, and I would, like, talk to my friends about it the next day, like, oh, you got to watch Raw. This guy beat Razor Ramon. I was like, he probably was, like, skinnier than you, and he, like, probably weighed, like, 110 pounds, and he was probably, like, this small. But you were bigger than half the guys on the roster now back then, right?
I was, like, 205 or 210.
Yeah.
I had baby fat, like, a chubby face. And
yeah, man.
Bloaty. Your bloat.
So funny. Well, look, man, I'm happy for you. I think it's amazing. I just think it's a great part of the story. I don't know if you're going to be able to beat entering into the Hall of Fame on a tank, but I love that, like, it just works out so well that you were able to be an impactful part of wrestling history with two groups of your best friends. You get to go in with two of your best friends the first year and the other two of your best friends the next year because this is what you did. I just think it's, I think it's so cool. I'm happy for you.
Yeah. It's, yeah, Sam, you know, talk about like my life and all that, and the things that have happened, but like the things that are currently happening now in my life are amazing too. Right. Like this stuff and just like, like happy, my kid. I have a great relationship with my kids.
Yes,
you know, I have a great relationship with my lady, and you know all of that. So
yeah, yeah, man. And you get to bring your kid now, 2 years in a row to see you get inducted. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's awesome. All right, man. Well, I can't wait to see you there, man. I really appreciate you making the time. I know you got a lot going on, so. This was great, man.
I'm about to go have a 2-pound Maine lobster pot pie.
Oh my! You already know your order and everything, huh? Well, you go enjoy that, man. Live the high life. I mean, you've got, from now until you not only get to. I feel like, you know, you get to be a Hall of Famer for a year, and then when the next class comes in, it's like people are talking about that class. But now you get extended another year, so you get to be the man even longer.
Yeah. Real quick, I don't mean to like go backwards, but like I do understand like a lot of people won't like that should be going into WWE or into the Hall of Fame. You know, will never end up at, like there's just so many people, and here I am 2 years in a row, and like, you know. I don't take that for granted. And I understand like, wow, some people might roll their eyes at that. I get it. You know, yeah. I am getting my ring, however.
Yeah. You're not going to turn it down. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, you can
do it all that.
Right. You can understand some of you can understand the criticism, but who among us would take that phone call and go, you know what? No, thanks. Not for me. Nobody. It's not going to happen. If they give you 5 rings, take all 5 rings. All right, man. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Man. It's now time for this week's State of Wrestling.
Yeah, it is time for it. State of Wrestling time. The American Dragon is back. How amazing is it? I don't know. And hopefully this is my strategy, that if you grow your facial hair, for a decade, if you grow your facial hair, and I guess the head on your hair too, but if you just grow your hair for 10 years, when you shave it all off, you will find that no aging has taken place. Somebody has already, and people on the internet are brilliant, somebody has already done the 10-year challenge with Daniel Bryan based on the picture of him returning tonight at TLC, and he looks exactly the same as he did in 2009. It's incredible. Go back, look at the footage of him when he was just starting to grow that beard out, when he was romancing AJ Lee on camera. He looks exactly the same. It looks like WWE just signed the American Dragon from Ring of Honor. It is incredible. I can only hope that facial hair has that effect on everybody. Although it's aging me listening to Booker T shill his beard cream on those kickoff shows every time. They have not put me back on a panel since Booker T started announcing his promo code in the introduction. But I will have something to say about that when they finally let me back to sit at that desk with that man, sir. Promo code? Really? Well, welcome to the state of wrestling. This is all about all the wrestling that has gone down in the last few days. By the way, how much fun was it talking with X-Pac? What a conversation. I am so lucky to be able to have those types of conversations and so lucky to be able to share them with you. Definitely let me know what you thought of that one. So, I guess we'll start with the most recent. I guess we'll start with TLC. It kind of was what it was. You know, I was surprised by some of the results. It was a little underwhelming. You know, I wasn't disgusted by it. I wouldn't even say I was disappointed by it. But I also wasn't like, oh my God, that was fantastic. I was like, okay, you know, I'm ready to drift into the holidays now, I guess. Royal Rumble's going to be fire. You know what I mean? That type of thing. So I guess the positives, the high notes, and the not-so-high notes. I thought the, no surprise, I thought the Bray Wyatt segment was great. Again, not a, the greatest match in the world, but I love the psychology that Bray Wyatt uses, the transition of the character within the match as it's going with The Miz, I thought was great. Man, The Miz comes off looking like a punk. I mean, I don't understand this guy. Okay, so I'm going to have my wife harassed. I'm going to have somebody messing with my child. The fruits of my loin. Is that what it's called? It's not the fruits of my loom. Fruits of my loin? The things that come from my loins. My child is going to be messed with by a monster. And I'm going to get to go toe-to-toe with that monster. And that monster is going to kick the stuffing out of me. I mean, you know, I believe it based on what we've seen from The Miz in 2019. Not a banner year. What a way to end 2019 for The Miz. I would say the best match on the show might have been Aleister Black versus Buddy Murphy. The match was great. Both guys came across looking good. That close-up of Aleister Black at the end of that match, when he's just like staring down the barrel of that camera, and they go for the zoom in, and he's got blood coming from his nose and everything. I thought that was super cool. What else was good? I was surprised that Baron Corbin beat Roman Reigns. Kind of surprised that they're continuing on with that story. You know, because, although, you know, here's what you have to keep in mind. How about this? Regardless of what it said on John Cena's Instagram, here's a headline. No John Cena at TLC. Put it in your calendars, boys and girls. 2019, the first year in God knows how many years that John Cena was not at and did not have a, I should say, did not have a match at a WWE pay-per-view. Now, he Instagrammed something, and we talked about it. We did a kickoff show, a pre-show, I should say. We did a pre-show to TLC earlier this Sunday afternoon, exclusively for the people over at patreon.com/notsamwrestling. So if you're on patreon.com/notsamwrestling, you got to see and or hear that pre-show. And it's still up if you missed it and you want to, you know, go back to what were our minds like before we saw this pay-per-view? You know, that show is up forever. John Cena has wrestled at least one pay-per-view match every year since 2002. John Cena broke his 17-year streak with 2019. Now, maybe when he Instagrammed out, you know, maintain the streak or whatever he Instagrammed out, he considers his WrestleMania appearance still a pay-per-view appearance. Maybe that's what maybe we need to redefine the John Cena streak of having matches at pay-per-views and consider him pay-per-view appearances. Because technically, if he doesn't appear at a pay-per-view next year, if he's not at WrestleMania this year and doesn't appear at a pay-per-view, then I would say it's like, whoa, John Cena just broke an 18-year streak. The streak of John Cena appearing at pay-per-views is still alive. It's just the streak of technically having matches. I think this is a technicality. I don't think that John Cena's streak is broken. I think because he was at WrestleMania and part of a segment with Elias as the Doctor of Thugonomics, I think that that counts. So everybody worried about John Cena's streak, don't worry. I think it's maintained because, again, if he doesn't appear at a pay-per-view in 2020, then it's not like we go, oh, well, he didn't appear at a pay-per-view last year. Yes, he did. He appeared at WrestleMania. Oh, well, technically, now we're getting into technicalities. WrestleMania counts as far as I'm concerned. The Revival, all the bad guys came in and helped Baron Corbin beat Roman Reigns. It seems like they're starting a royal family around Baron Corbin, except it's with the other bad guys. It's with Dolph Ziggler and the Revival, which is, you know, feels a little cookie cutter to me. But I love the Revival. Ziggler's good. Corbin is the freaking man. It's like my favorite wrestler. So, you know, there's something to it. I'm just surprised that they're continuing on with the Roman storyline, to tell you the truth. We talked about it. I wasn't shocked that the OC answered the Viking Raiders challenge. And the fact that it ended in a double countout was almost just like, I didn't even count as a match. But it was weird because the pay-per-view ended at 10:15. You know, it's interesting because people go like, oh, the pay-per-view ended at 10:15 on the East Coast. It was a short pay-per-view. It started at 7. So we've now got pay-per-views going 3 hours and 15 minutes and going, oh, that was short. And that's, you know, that's because WWE conditioned us that pay-per-views would last a certain amount of time. But, yeah, so it felt short. But in reality, let's keep in mind, they're starting at 7 p.m. 6 p.m. with the kickoff show. So it's still a long night. And ending in the double countout again. It feels like, you know, just the start of something. So it was what it was. I wouldn't consider this the OC's tag team title match. Again, it would have been cool. We talked about it on the pre-show that we did for Patreon. It would have been cool to see the OC win the tag titles and then they have all the gold, but they didn't, so we won't. So it is what it is. I like the Viking Raiders. I thought the New Day Revival ladder match was really great. You know, I thought, yeah, Kofi was at his best. I was glad they gave it the amount of time that they did. I thought that was a very good match. And I thought that the women's match, personally, I think that the Bray Wyatt Miz match should have closed that show. I think The Fiend is the hottest thing on television right now. Or, you know, if you're going to end with a Roman Reigns melee, just do the Roman Reigns match last and then do the melee immediately. Like Jerry Lawler going, they've been fighting for a half an hour. Like when he says that, you go, nobody fights for a half an hour. What do you mean? So you mean to tell me that Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin just destroyed each other in a TLC match? And then for the entire length of the Women's Tag Team Championship TLC match, for the entire length, Roman and Baron and the bad guys and the good guys were all brawling for the whole time. They were just brawling. I mean, what kind of security is in that building where for a half an hour they can't stop these guys from fighting? Go home. Your match is over. You don't need to be here anymore. Go home. Yeah, if you're going to end in a Roman melee, I don't know why you don't end with the Roman match if that's what you want to do, but, you know, whatever. I would have ended with the Bray Wyatt match and have the last shot of the night be a new, freshly shorn Daniel Bryan staring down because The Fiend is the hottest thing on TV. You've got your moment with The Fiend. Fiend showed up on the Titantron, which was cool. You got your Bray Wyatt moment. Everybody loves Daniel Bryan. Everybody's interested in what's happening with the Daniel Bryan Bray Wyatt story. That's a story that people are going to tune into SmackDown to see what happens next. I think that people are intrigued by Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt. So why not end on that? And I guess it's easy, 2020 being the key, 2020 being what it is, we can all say that. But we kind of learned this at Survivor Series. You know, I don't think I was in favor of Charlotte and Becky and the Kabuki Warriors, But there were a lot of people out there that aren't necessarily in favor of that and aren't even in favor of Becky and Charlotte being in the position that they're in. You know, for the Kabuki Warriors to win that match, I expected a little bit more tension between Becky and Charlotte to kind of excuse the loss. And it felt, honestly, the match felt a little bit long to me. It was good. They were killing themselves. And you almost feel bad criticizing anything that those women are fighting so hard. I think Kairi Sane just showcased herself tonight. I mean, I think she, you're looking right now at Charlotte and Asuka, two of the best women wrestlers on the planet. You're looking at Becky Lynch, the biggest female wrestling star on the planet. And then you're looking at Sane, who she was in NXT and wasn't beating Shayna Baszler before she came to the main roster. You know what I mean? She's not a household name. She's not a big star like Becky Lynch. And she hasn't worked on the level in WWE of an Asuka or a Charlotte. And I thought she completely stepped up to the plate. And I would imagine, I was already a believer, but I would imagine made a believer out of a lot of people that may not have been believers before. However, I think if that match had been 5 to 10 minutes shorter and it happened halfway through the show instead of in the main event, I think it would have been received universally positive. And I think you certainly would not have had the reaction that you had from the audience tonight, which was quiet. And you could blame Minnesota for it. But now, two pay-per-views in a row, we're blaming Chicago for being quiet during the women's triple threat in Survivor Series, and we're blaming Minnesota for being quiet in the women's TLC. And I don't think it necessarily has to do with women either. You know what I mean? Like, Becky Lynch was in both matches. Maybe it's a Becky Lynch thing. Maybe it's just the fact that some of the stories are not quite there. Maybe it's in the way the matches are laid out. Again, if you would put that match not last and made it slightly shorter, I think everybody in the world would have been, I think it still could have stolen the show. I don't think it did steal the show. I think it could have stolen the show had it been in a position to win a little bit more. That said, they all just crushed it. All four of them completely crushed it, left everything out there, and I mean tore each other. I can't imagine how they're feeling now. I can't imagine how they're going to feel going forward. I can't believe that after that TLC match, they're going to wrestle again the next night, tonight, on Monday Night Raw. It's insane to me. Insane elbow drop to me. But yeah, so you know, oh, and the Rusev-Bobby Lashley match. I was surprised that Lashley won kind of as easily as he did. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know where Rusev goes after this. You know, Bobby Lashley clearly won that match. So, you know, I don't know that Rusev sits there and goes like, well, I want another match. It's almost like, let it go, dude. You divorced her. She's hanging out with Lashley now. You don't even like her anymore. And Lashley put you through a table in a tables match. I don't know what argument you have anymore. Rusev, let it go. Go talk about Rusev Day with somebody else. Understand that your wife, ex-wife, and Bobby Lashley are an item. They might be obnoxious to you. Let it go. It's done nothing for your career. It's done nothing for your personal life, and it's done nothing for your fan base. I think Rusev has to move on after this show. Hopefully he will, but he probably will not. Let's talk about the shows that happened this week. Aside from TLC, on Friday you had SmackDown, which again, oh my God, and we haven't spoken since SmackDown. Dude, Bray Wyatt and The Miz and them being inside The Miz's house and there being a little fiend doll in The Miz's kid's crib and Maurice sees it on the baby cam and all. Amazing. Amazing. I loved. By the way, I was very jealous of the people who got to eat KFC at ringside tonight. That's something that I would love to do at a pay-per-view. But, I mean, I thought it was such good TV. The Bray Wyatt breaking into Miz's house, theoretically, to leave, like, when they looked at the cam and all the little characters from the Firefly Funhouse are in Monroe's crib. And Monroe, like, for a toddler that she is, she's incredible. When they're picking her up and she's, like, pointing at the crib, like, oh, look over there. And they look and that's where they find the Fiend doll. I don't know how you get this little kid to do this stuff. But she's awesome. Props to her. I thought that was, she was good. I thought the whole thing was really, really spectacular. You know, I thought it was great. Front Row is saying in the Discord room right now, I heard Monroe Mizanin and starts at the PC next week. She should. She's a naturally gifted performer. She's incredible. She might be the best Mizanin of all. I thought that was great. But at the same time as SmackDown, we had Ring of Honor Final Battle. And then on Saturday, you had NWA Into the Fire. And then you had the CZW Cage of Death show. I watched at least parts of all three of the shows on the Fight TV app. The Fight TV app is so good for, like, just trying to catch all these wrestling shows. It's so difficult. But when you've got an app, and I can just kind of scroll through it throughout the weekend, like, oh, like, if I can watch it live, I can. But if I either forget it or I just don't have time, I can get home. You know, it's 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. The kids are in bed. My wife falls asleep. I'm not going to bed yet. I could just pick up my app and start scrolling through and be like, oh, yeah, there was the Cage of Death this weekend. There was Into the Fire this weekend. Like, oh, Final Battle. Like, oh, I didn't see this match. It's awesome. I love living in the future. But, you know, so I was looking at, like, Ring of Honor, for example. I think this is a conversation for Ring of Honor and CZW. So Ring of Honor, they switched a lot of their titles and they put PCO, the former Quebecer Pierre, PCO is not human, they put the title on him. I'm good with that. I think PCO is a great character. I've been intrigued for the last, I don't know, year or two, however long he's been doing the indies as this new PCO is not human character. I've been on board. I think it's great. I love that him and Destro put out the, like, YouTube videos where they just have him basically do things that would kill a normal man, but not PCO. I'm here for it. And to watch a 52-year-old man doing moonsaults onto tables and whatnot, it's just a freak show, and I love it. I think it's great. I love the character. I think it's perfect. It's like nothing else that's going on in wrestling, and that's always a good thing. But they did this thing, right? PCO wins the Ring of Honor Championship. And they start telling this story of, like as if PCO has achieved his destiny. Who would have thought at 52 years old, this man comes back and blah, blah, blah. And you're telling this hopeful, nice, great story of a man, right? When earlier in the match, you were trying to convince me PCO is not human. I don't think that it makes sense to play on somebody's heartstrings to support somebody who is trying to be like a freak of nature monster type person. And not that PCO is supposed to be a villain, but just to be like, I don't think you should ever mention PCO's age. I don't think you should mention any of it. Just be like, PCO, of all the people in Ring of Honor history, we look at this man for the first time ever. We have a man who's champion, and he's not even human. If there was any doubt that PCO was not human, tonight the doubters have been silenced as this man has gone through destruction, carnage, and mayhem to stand up the Ring of Honor champion. Like, tell that story, right? Tell the story of this guy who's just gone through. And, you know, I thought it's like little things. Like, they went to all this effort to have the hearse there that was like steaming, but then it was shot like weird. Like, it wasn't shot below so that the hearse looked big, or you could kind of see, like, with the suplex overhead, you could, it, like, it was shot in a not flattering way. And I'm like, if you're gonna go to all the trouble, like, don't go halfway, let's go all the way, you know. I think in the production elements and the storytelling, there's still a lot Ring of Honor can be doing. I think, you know, CZW has all this brand equity. They've been around for 20 years. They've got brand equity, and now they've got stars that have come from CZW. You've got Jon Moxley. You've got all these people. Even MJF came from CZW. Leo Rush came from CZW. Joey Janela, and that's just the recent ones. There's lots of mainstream guys that have come from CZW, but it never gets brought up because of CZW's kind of brand, right? And, you know, I think that you need to have the deathmatch stuff, right? You need to have your Cage of Death. You need to have the deathmatch tournament out in Delaware. You need to have that stuff to really satisfy the hardcore fans and to differentiate yourself. But what's not going on are stories that make it so that your small but loyal audience is desperate to see two guys kill each other in a death match. If we're going to have a death match, make me believe that there is a reason for being. Make me believe that they need to have this death match. You know, I was looking and I was watching some of CZW Live, and a lot of the fans were disappointed. A lot of the fans were like, this is not a good show. And, man, this is just a lesson for promotions, I think. There are so many eyes on wrestling right now. There is so much opportunity for wrestling right now. You know, with stuff like the Fight TV app, with stuff like the fact that you can get Ring of Honor on pay-per-view, and the fact that, like, WWE and AEW are both forcing the conversation. And there's more wrestling podcasts than ever, all forcing this conversation. So that even if there aren't stars in wrestling that are as big as, say, Stone Cold or The Rock, the notion of professional wrestling is probably as big as it's ever been. And there are so many avenues for content. More wrestling fans than ever have become okay with the idea of just consuming wrestling 24 hours a day, that being their interest. And I love that. Trust me. I mean, the amount of wrestling I consume is crazy, and I'm so happy that I can. But I feel like there are promotions that take the eyes and the ability for granted. I mean, with the amount of exposure that wrestling in general just has, and the buzz that you can build on the internet with wrestling, I think in 2019 and 2020, there is no excuse to not try to do things on shows that are gonna get a buzz. I think all promotions, all wrestling promotions, no matter how small they are, should be doing everything in their power to tell stories and show spectacular feats that are gonna make people talk in a positive way. When you got something that people are using, like the Fight app, right? Because let's say they liked the NWA pay-per-view. So they've got the app. If you can create a buzz that's big enough that makes me go like, yeah, I'd spend $20 to see this CZW thing that everybody's talking about. Now you can actually pay off. It's one thing when it's like, yeah, everybody's talking, I got to get so many people talking that they'll go to my website and they'll buy a VHS tape and they'll go home and they'll watch it and they'll buy the next one and they'll tell their friend and blah, blah, blah. Now it's just like, you have to get people talking to the point that they'll actually buy the show on an app. And people will buy shows that are old. People will buy shows that have already aired. Especially if it's $20-25 and they already have the app. Like, why not go out of your way to create content that feels can't miss, at least to your audience? I don't know, man. I feel like there now more than ever, there is no excuse to not put everything in to what you're doing. And that goes for promoters, that goes for wrestlers, that goes for people doing promos, that goes for broadcasters, that goes for commentators, like everybody, announcer, everybody needs to go out there and say, there is the potential to get the whole world to look at this. Because with everything, there is. Everything nowadays, you have the potential to have the whole world look at you. So why not go out of your way to try to create something that the whole world might want to look at? Why not at least try to create something that's gonna make the world talk? And it's not enough to sit there and go, well, PCO is our champion, that's gonna make the world talk. Like, no. In the presentation, like, oh my God, this is outside of the box. This, it just looks so cool. There's just something about it that you gotta see. Like, that should be every show. I think that NWA Into the Fire, as far as independent shows this weekend, got a bigger buzz than anybody. Because the matches were good at NWA Into the Fire. Because it looks different. It's studio wrestling. It feels like studio wrestling, but you're taking it seriously. I thought, you know, when we were talking to Billy Corgan and Dave Lagana on the podcast a couple weeks ago, they talked about how the TV studio would be altered for the pay-per-view. The pay-per-view was still going to happen in the TV studio, but they were going to alter it so that it didn't look like the TV show. And it worked. Coming down from the crowd and everything, I thought the whole thing worked. I thought Stu Bennett was great. You know, obviously, the biggest non-WWE story of the weekend was Marty Scurll showing up at NWA Into the Fire, which I thought was just brilliant for everybody. I think that because he hasn't been shown in the greatest light in the world in Ring of Honor in the last since AEW started, you know, Ring of Honor has not utilized the fact that they have Marty Scurll signed for as long as they have Marty Scurll signed. So I think that he could use a trip somewhere else before he goes to either WWE or NXT or AEW. I think that this trip to the NWA, because of the way the NWA does business, it can probably be short-lived, but he can do some amazing stuff. He can get onto a show that's going to do 200, 250,000 views on YouTube. He can cut a promo that, you know, he can put out on social media and the whole world's going to see it. He can have a match with Aldis at some point that everybody remembers. Oh, this is why we thought there was so much potential with Marty Scurll. Look, man, I really hope that dude ends up in NXT. I am a big Marty Scurll fan. We'll see where he goes. But the fact that he's in NWA right now, I think is so cool. I think it's really good for NWA. And I think it's really cool for Marty Scurll, too. I think it's the best for everybody. I don't think it would be crazy for Marty Scurll to spend a couple months going and kind of rebuilding and cementing his reputation as a main event caliber guy. I think it would be probably pretty good for him. All right, folks, I appreciate you guys hanging in there. Don't forget, go to youtube.com/NotSamWrestling. If you haven't already, please subscribe to youtube.com/NotSamWrestling. You can also always send in questions to notsamwrestling@gmail.com. You can also send them via Patreon if you're a Not Sam shill at patreon.com/notsamwrestling. Joey on Patreon, he writes, you mentioned the boys a few episodes back. I'm wondering how you would book a Velveteen Dream versus Dalton Castle. Who's the manliest man, or should I say glamliest? Tuss, say hi to Chip for me. I don't want to hear about Chip on this podcast. It's my one escape. Yeah, I think a Velveteen Dream Dalton Castle match, especially in NXT, would be very well done. But you know, I think yeah, you know, Velveteen Dream coming in and saying, you know, you're some half-rate Velveteen Dream wannabe like you, Dalton Castle, and it would almost be like Dalton Castle taking on Cleopatra the Desert, or what was that? You know, it'd be like Freddie Mercury, 70s Freddie Mercury, not 80s mustache. I'm talking about 70s era Freddie Mercury. I think it would be like Freddie Mercury versus Prince to do Dalton Castle versus Velveteen Dream. I think it could be really cool. Really, really cool. All right, guys, I appreciate you hanging out. We will see you next time on Thursday. Thursday is when we'll see you again for an episode of Thursday, Not Sam Thursday. Have a good day, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Follow at Not Sam on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
review, and subscribe. This has been Not Sam Wrestling.